Welcome to American Indian Living, a program developed by the Native Education and Health Initiative to improve and enhance the health of people throughout the Native communities. American Indian Living is hosted by Dr. David DeRose, a board-certified specialist in both internal medicine and preventive medicine. Dr. DeRose has a wide range of experience with Native health issues, and he's ready today to help you learn more about your health. Here's Dr. DeRose.
Hello, I'm Dr. David DeRose, welcoming you to today's edition of American Indian Living. We're speaking about a topic today that's close to the heart of everyone who's interested in the health of Native American communities. And whether you're tuning in today representing a tribal population, whether you're listening on a reservation, or if you're a Native American living in an urban setting, or whether you come to us today tuning in with a background that's totally different from another population segment of this great vast continent of North America, we welcome you, and we know that we've got something in store for you that I think you'll find fascinating and important. The topic today, can we defeat the childhood obesity epidemic? We're going to be speaking today with one of the experts in the field, Dr. Carolyn Ashworth. She is a pediatrician. She has been in practice for more than 30 years. She is involved with not only medicine from the standpoint of one who is caring for patients, but she is a mother herself, and so brings a mother's wisdom to the table also. Carolyn, it's great to have you with us on today's show.
Yes.
You know, I've got to tell you something. I mean, our listeners cannot see the beautiful book that you've recently put out, Defeating the Child Obesity Epidemic. I review a lot of books. We have a lot of authors on the show. But your book, I mean, it's really a beautiful book. It's laid out very nicely. It's easy to understand. This wasn't something you just did in an evening, was it?
No. It was a labor of love, but it was an intense amount of work over the last year. Longer than that, obviously, because I put my clinical background into it and also my raising of my two children, but the real intense scientific research and the data did take over a year to collect.
You've got a lot of fascinating information, and I know our listeners are interested in hearing it, and perhaps probably better than any other place to start is with this whole issue. I mean, there's really a debate going on in circles throughout our country, Canada, throughout the world, where some people are saying, you know, obesity has been overplayed. It's really not all that important an issue. And others are saying, look, we have got to be concerned about the growing waistline of our kids, if no one else. Where do you weigh in on this topic, Dr. Ashworth?
Well, I think that, you know, we can argue that, yes, obesity may or may not be a cosmetic issue to some people. But when I see the medical complications of diabetes, we have had a vast increase in cardiovascular risks. We've had a tremendous increase in type 2 diabetes, diseases that I was really not trained in pediatrics to handle. I had to go back and get... I've been intensely training on adult diseases because now I'm seeing adult diseases in my young patients. And so we can't just deny that, you know, we can't say obesity is really not that big an issue and that, you know, we can't be that concerned with our physical appearance. It's not just a physical appearance that we're talking about. And this is going to be the first generation of parents that will be burying their children. This is the first generation of children who are not expected to outlive their parents since World War II. And to me, that's just tragic.
And we can really put the blame on the growing weight of kids? Is that pretty sound in the medical literature?
Yes. I mean, I think there's data that show very distinctly how these diseases have increased tremendously in the last 30 years, and particularly the last 20 years. And many of the diseases, like I said, we didn't call type 2 diabetes type 2 diabetes years ago. We called it adult onset diabetes. Mm-hmm. But we've had to change our definitions now. And the type of essential hypertension that we used to say, you know, that was an adult disease, we're now seeing in children, liver cirrhosis and fatty liver that we saw in alcoholics, we're now seeing in obese children. There's severe bone and joint problems that occur with obesity. And then the psychological aspects are devastating. Children who have been surveyed as to their quality of life, if they are obese, they have rated their quality of life less than that of people who have children who have cancer and are undergoing chemotherapy.
Wow.
So to me, that just saddens you. And me as a mother and as a pediatrician, it's just devastating when I'm seeing all the tremendous improvements in child health care that have occurred in the last 20 years. We have new vaccines to fight many of the meningitis problems that I used to treat as a resident. The new, all the safety, the bicycle helmets, the car seats, poison control centers, cancer chemotherapies that are, eliciting literally cures in kids with cancer. You know, all of those things put together will be unraveled by this one childhood epidemic. And now childhood obesity is the number one chronic disease of childhood. And to me, it's entirely preventable, which means that we've got to start doing something and doing it quickly.
Now, of course, this is where we want to go on the show. We want to talk about some of the solutions. But before we do, I mean, you've gone through a lot of medical information. And, for you and I as fellow physicians, it's easy to track these things. But some of our listeners, I can imagine, some of these terms just, they heard them, but they said, now, wait a minute, cirrhosis? I thought that was related to alcohol, and you're talking about cirrhosis in kids. Tell us a little bit more about this concern.
Well, the children who are obese develop, they get fat in their liver, and it blocks their liver and actually kills off the cells in their liver, and their liver turns into this hard organ that can't function, and you go into liver failure. And your liver is really your filtering system and your, it's the big factory of your body that gives you the energy and the vitality of your body. Your heart is pumping the blood, but the liver is filtering things and helping you digest things. And when that gets all plugged up with fat, the only alternative is a liver transplant. And, that's kind of a tragic a tragic thing to think that our kids are going to have to be going through that. Even if we have enough livers to transplant, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Now, Dr. Ashworth, you practice pediatrics full-time, correct?
Yes.
And you're there in the Dallas, Texas area. Are you personally actually seeing kids who have liver irritation from this fatty buildup?
Yes, we do. And matter of fact, part of our protocols when we're looking at children who are obese is actually doing liver function studies on them as part of our protocols. We try to detect the liver disease early. We try to detect their insulin resistance, which is leading them toward diabetes. So when we see that they're obese, we start screening them early in order to try to detect these problems before they're actually irreversible.
And so what the implication is then that if you catch them early and you can help kids trim down a bit, they can actually reverse these problems?
Absolutely. And it's not a tremendous weight loss that we usually have to elicit. It's about a 5% body weight loss. In kids who we don't advocate weight loss in children who are obese without the metabolic problems, without the complications. If they don't have medical complications, what we want them to do is grow taller and try to maintain their weight, and so they'll grow into their weight. But children who are already having issues that show us that they are at risk for heart disease, liver disease, diabetes, then those kids we want to get to have a 5% weight loss. And that can reverse those medical complications.
No, I mean, this is important stuff, and, I appreciate you bringing this to our attention. Well, let's just talk about one other thing as we're laying the foundation for some of the important information you're going to give us as far as what people can do, the practical solutions that you've identified. But even the title of your book, I mean, it's Defeating the Child Obesity Epidemic. There are many organizations today that would take issue with you for even using the term child obesity. I know you talk about this some in your book, but maybe some of our listeners aren't aware of this very heated battle that's going on in medical circles as to what we even label a child who has got some extra pounds that they're carrying. Can you help us sort through all this?
Well, I know that the American Academy of Pediatrics and some other groups define the children as, they take the term overweight and say at risk for being overweight. And then they take the term obesity and they call that overweight. So you're either at risk for overweight or overweight rather than being overweight and obese. To me, it's just candy coating a diagnosis. We're just trying to circumvent the real issue by making it sound nicer. And it's not like when a child comes into my office that I go, oh, my gosh, you are obese and we've got to do something.
Right.
No,
right.
But it is a medical diagnosis. And, you know, that one physician got in trouble recently by making the diagnosis of obesity, and he had other issues, I know. But, you know, we've got to be able medically to make the diagnosis, and people have to face the fact. And I think we have to accept that like we would accept any other diagnosis. Yeah, it's not a great word. We don't like that word. But reality is reality. And the more we try to make it nicer, I guess, and look better, the less we're going to pay attention to it.
Let's talk a little bit about this then. If a child does walk into your office, how do you as a pediatrician really tell if that child is seriously overweight or obese or whatever terminology we want to use? How can a parent know?
Okay, well, unfortunately, 80% of parents don't recognize their children are overweight or obese, and 70% of the doctors fail to diagnose it. So it gets down to measuring a body mass index, or BMI. And what we do is we take the child's height and their weight, and then we get a number. There's a formula you can use that's in the book, and you can get it on the Internet to calculate the BMI. And then there's charts that you can get off the Internet, or your doctor should have them, where you plot their height and their weight, their sex and their age, and you come up with a number. And if that number falls between the 5th and the 75th percentile, they're in the normal weight range. 75th to 85th, they're considered borderline. And then 85th to the 95th, they're overweight. And over the 95th, they're considered obese. So you can look at the chart, and that's pretty much what I do when somebody comes in is, We look at each child about every 6 months, if they're in, no matter what they're in for, if they're in for an illness or in for a physical, we plot their body mass index. And then what I do is I kind of, you know, just gently kind of show the parent where their child's falling on the graph, where the normal range is, and try to gently lead them into the fact that, you know, this is something we need to address. We need to start talking about it. And then I try to give them some materials that help point them in the right direction. You know, we don't just blast them with the fact that this is an emergency and they've got to do something or their kid's going to die. You know, you try to ease on into it and know that people, you try to empower them so that they can make some simple changes in their lives that will benefit the child.
So now we talk about percentiles in medicine, and I know a lot of lay people, their eyes kind of glaze over. But basically what you're saying is if you're in the top 5%, of kids as far as your weight for your age and sex, that's obese.
Right.
By the definitions that you and some other groups are using.
Right.
And then if they're in the top 15%, so, you know, one out of seven kids, they're in the top seventh, roughly,
right,
that they are considered overweight if they're in that group. Is that an easier way for people to grasp that?
And it's not so much, you know, like those percentiles. I mean, that's, like you said, we can deal with those numbers. It's just if you just, you know, see where they fall on the chart, I mean, it's a pretty good visual for people when they see, you know, that normal range and then where the child is falling. I mean, I think that gives people a real good grasp, even if they don't understand all the numbers and everything that's going on. I mean, you can see, you know, you can sort of see if the ball is in or out of the court kind of thing, you know, so to speak. And some kids, obviously, you can see that they are well on their way to obesity just by eyeballing them. But it's the ones that are kind of borderline or the younger kids that are very difficult to tell. And kids have to get really skinny between 4 to 6 years of age. And we can talk about that later.
Yes, we'll do that. I'm Dr. David DeRose. I'm talking today with Dr. Carolyn Ashworth. She's a pediatrician. She's the author of the book, Defeating the Child Obesity Epidemic. We're going to be talking about what you can do, what difference you can make, how you can know if your kids or the children you love are at risk or have got problems, and where to go from there. We're going to be back with more in just a couple of minutes. Stay tuned.
Today's broadcast has been pre-recorded. However, if you have questions about today's show or would like further information, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. We'll be right back after this.
My name is Florence AQ. For lunch today, I had grilled chicken and squash. I am Zuni Indian, and I have the power to prevent diabetes.
My name is D. Dakota Denesosi. I turned the TV off and took my nieces and nephews for a walk. We saw two jackrabbits, an eagle, and zero cartoons. I'm from the Dene Nation, and I have the power to prevent diabetes.
Science has proven that if we lose as little as 10 pounds by walking briskly for 30 minutes, 5 days a week, and make healthier food choices, we can prevent diabetes.
My name is Barbara Akasakpuk-Curtis. I'm losing weight and being more active. I am Alaskan Inupiaq Eskimo, and I have the power to prevent diabetes.
For more information on how to prevent diabetes, talk to your health care provider. For free materials, call the National Diabetes Education Program at 1-800-438-5383 and ask for the power to prevent diabetes. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
This is Meryl Streep. Over the years, I have played some characters you could call controlling, but the truth is, there's so much in life we can't control. But here's something we can. Colorectal cancer. It affects men and women, and it's the second leading cancer killer in the U.S., which is astounding, considering it's almost entirely preventable. Here's how. Most colon cancers start as polyps, and screening helps find polyps so they can be removed before they even turn into cancer. Screening also finds this cancer early, when treatment works best. For me, screening was simple and quick. It was no big deal, except for the huge sense of relief you feel afterwards. There are several tests that you can choose from. If you're 50 or older, you should talk to your doctor. Decide which one's right for you. Take control. Do everything you can to prevent colon cancer. Screening saves lives. It could really save your life. For more information, call 1-800-CDC-INFO.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
You're listening to Dr. David DeRose on American Indian Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE. 1-800-775-4673. Here again is Dr. DeRose.
Welcome back to American Indian Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. We're speaking today with Dr. Carolyn Ashworth. Dr. Ashworth, a pediatrician who has become concerned with the rising tide of obesity throughout North America. She sees it in her practice. She's been telling us, if you've missed the first segment of our show, about the staggering burden of suffering that she sees in diseases like high blood pressure, diabetes, liver irritation, all of these things, psychological problems related to the growing girth of our kids. And it's true, whether you're in Indian country today or wherever you're at in this continent, we have got problems with our weight. Dr. Ashworth, though, you know, I know from past experience, many people who are listening, they're saying, well, you know, I need really to hear this from my friend, but my kids, my grandkids don't have a problem. We don't need to be worried about this. Are there a lot of people who can really just turn this show off and forget about your book and just go about their life?
Well, I hope not, because the book is really addressed on two levels. One is, if you have a problem, I'm giving you some solutions of how to help yourself or help your child. And if you don't have the problem, then, you know, hallelujah. And the book gives you ways to prevent it even further, because prevention is the key. And parents are the weight loss secret. They are the ones who can turn this around. So I think that we can look at it in both ways, and even people, grandparents, could use the book, because mm-hmm. they could help their grandchildren. You know, there's many different levels here, and I think what we need to know is that we can turn it around, and we can do it with simple little things.
Well, let's talk about some of those simple things. I mean, you talk with patients, and they're their parents, their grandparents, day in and day out. What are the things that you're finding make the biggest difference if a child, if a parent, grandparent is interested in helping that child to lose a few pounds or not to gain weight as they're growing in height?
Well, I think the first thing is we have to be good role models, because the kids, they don't always listen to what we say, but they sure do watch what we do. And, you know, I think if we are up and about and doing things and enjoying life, if we are eating mindfully so that we are eating without the TV on, if we're eating, sitting down at a table and we're enjoying our food, they see us eating our vegetables and our fruits and picking healthy snacks and things like that. And, you know, I think they learn from that. They learn from what the parents are doing. And so if you have a parent who's sitting there saying, well, I don't, you know, I got to be 40 years old and I didn't eat my vegetables. Well, I've heard kids recite that back to me, you know. So we've got to know that they are watching and learning from everything we do. So we are the ones that have to turn off the TV, get up off the sofa, try to cook that family meal, you know, and make that family meal pleasant so that we're not talking about what they didn't do in terms of their chores or how they didn't get their homework done. Or, you know, it shouldn't be a time for, I guess, you know, it shouldn't be an unpleasant time. It should be a very nice 20 minutes is all the meal has to be, you know, to take your time. I mean, it could be longer, but 20 minutes is a reasonable amount of time where certainly families could get together for at least that on a Saturday for lunch or a breakfast on a Sunday or a couple of days during the week where they're not running around, you know, driving through a fast food place and eating each other in the, you know, as they pass in the night, so to speak. You know, I that's one of the things that the book also mentions is overscheduling the kids. You know, we're not giving our kids enough time just to run around and be free and be creative. We're booking them in things that we think they're being active. But, you know, when you think about a kid being in a organized sport, a lot of the times they're sitting on the sideline. You know, they may warm up a little bit, but then after that, they're sitting there watching the other kids play. And so then we think, well, gee, they got in an hour of exercise. Well, no, they didn't. You know, and then we have to drive them through the fast food lane to get to the next activity while they eat in the car. You know, it's not really the best way, I think, for us to really learn how to enjoy our lives. That's just my
You know, I mean, I think there's a tremendous observation, because I know a lot of parents who are concerned about their kids' activity. I mean, the kind of knee-jerk response is, you know, get them involved in the athletics. But, I mean, I think your point is very good that, you know, many of these kids whether it's the sport they're playing, whether they're, you know, watching the game more than playing it, they would probably get a lot more exercise if they were just playing outside than being in this organized sport.
And we've got a list of activities that they can do. The book details them, but it's things like just, you know, throwing a frisbee, you know, bouncing a ball around, kicking a ball around, playing tag, taking a walk. You know, you don't need a lot of equipment. You don't need to join a gym. You know, you just have to make the time and commit to, you know, changing things around and make the mental commitment. And so, you know, there's a lot of things that we can do as parents that are really a lot of fun that will help us be with our kids. And I think that time is absolutely precious. And we need to spend more time with the kids rather than driving them around. You know, we're not really spending time with them when we're in the car driving them around. You know, I think there's a lot of things that if people would pay attention to what's in the book, it would improve their quality of life generally and improve their waistline as a secondary benefit even.
You know, another thing that I like about your book, I mean, you've got a lot of these practical illustrations, got a lot of stories, you've got a lot of nice tables and illustrations. One of those stories, you talked about a couple of parents who really laid down the law on the family. Supposedly they were going to be good role models too, I presume, but the kids immediately became aware that some of the contraband foods were things that the parents had their own stash of.
Right.
What happens in that kind of scenario where the parents set a different standard for the kids than they themselves follow?
Well, you know, hopefully the kids will find out and bust them, you know. But I think what we need to do is realize that that's the worst thing that we can possibly do is set a double standard. It's like, do as I say, not as I do. Mm-hmm. You know, so there we are sitting on the couch eating our chips, telling the kids to get out and move around and do something. Well, that seems to be like, why? You know, the kids are looking at us like, well, if it's good enough for you, why isn't it good enough for me, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that makes no sense that we're going to be sneaking the ice cream at night when the kids are in bed. You know, the kids are smart. They figure these things out, you know, and we really can't do those kinds of things. We've got to, the whole key to weight management for kids is really a family lifestyle. Huh. You know, and it's the whole family that needs to be in the same kind of mindset and situation. You can't single out any one child and say, you know, you're fat, so you can't eat this, and, you know, you're fat, so get outside and play. I mean, that just can't be. If the parents take over and change these things, I've seen benefits to the parents. I've had one mother who started walking her kids to school. She lost 5 pounds in a couple of weeks doing that and was just delighted about it. And, you know, I've had other parents who have declared a no-fry zone, which I thought was pretty cute. And she lets the kids have something fried maybe once a week. But other than that, and she said the kids are loving it. She said at first they really, you know, griped and moaned about it. But then she said now they're really loving their fruits and vegetables and even prefer that. So you can change it, and there will be gripes and moans. You know, that's just the way things are. But we're parents, and we need to be the ones that take charge, because our kids are not the ones driving themselves to the fast food places, you know, until they're in their teens and get their driver's license. We're the ones who's driving them there, and we're certainly the ones with the money buying the food. So we have the control. Now, I think that's great.
Yeah, you know, one of the fascinating things, Dr. Ashworth, about the frying issue, you know, in Indian country, at least in many places, I mean, frying is, I mean, you start getting really to talking about what many people consider traditional foods. I mean, you think of fry bread. And it's interesting, though, as you look back, and you're probably aware of this, but in Native American culture, if you go back before Europeans came to this continent, Native Americans were not frying their foods. And so the call that you're making, one of these simple steps, is really to kind of go back to our roots, if you will, and indigenous cultures throughout the world, whether we're speaking to Native Americans or to another population, because frying is really a relatively modern invention, and it clearly is not giving us any benefits as far as preventing heart disease or cancer or weight problems.
No,
I'm sorry, go ahead, Dr. Ashworth.
Frying has really, you know, that kind of thing has infiltrated pretty much all the cultures now. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, what we do know is that the Western lifestyle that we have, its impact on all of the world is very great. And that the longer people, like an immigrant, say, to this country, the longer they are here and they adopt more and more of the Western lifestyle, there is more of a risk for obesity. And we know in other countries where Western lifestyle has infiltrated, the fast foods, the more sedentariness, those countries are also catching up with us in terms of our obesity. So, yeah, I think you're right. I think if we look back historically, people were eating a lot of natural foods and having a lot of natural grains. And we have twisted all that now. And so, you know, things have become very unnatural. And I think we've got to look at, I had one radio show host say to me, he doesn't eat anything that he can't read, he can't pronounce the ingredients on the bag, which I think is a good rule of thumb.
No, it's an excellent rule of thumb. That'll keep you close to nature, avoiding all those synthetic chemicals. We're talking with Dr. Carolyn Ashworth. When we come back in just a couple of moments, I'm going to tell you more about her book, where you can get it. It's called Defeating the Childhood Obesity Epidemic. But more than that, we've got lots of practical hints if you're trying to make a difference in your community or in your own home. I'm Dr. David DeRose. Stay tuned for more. We'll be back.
American Indian Living will continue in a moment. If you have questions or comments about today's pre-recorded broadcast, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673.
I'm Karen, and two very important people in my life, my husband and my father, have been diagnosed with atrial fibrillation. Atrial fibrillation, or AFib, is a type of irregular heartbeat. People with AFib are 5 times more likely to have a stroke than people without AFib. Talk with a healthcare professional today about your risk and learn how to manage AFib to prevent a stroke. Visit stroke.org/AFib to learn more.
Did you know that 63% of homes contain allergens from cockroaches? And that mice spread potent asthma triggers found in 82% of homes? It's true. Common household pests are major offenders on the list of indoor allergens. Learn what you can do to help your family breathe easier. Visit pestworld.org. A public service message from the National Pest Management Association and the Asthma and Allergy Foundation of America.
You're listening to Dr. David DeRose on American Indian Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE, 1-800-775-4673. Here again is Dr. DeRose.
Welcome back to the second half of today's edition of American Indian Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. We're speaking today about the growing problem of overweight in North America. This is not just a problem in Indian country. Yes, it is of concern in tribal communities, but it's a concern across cultural lines in the world, really. And we're speaking with Dr. Carolyn Ashworth. I promised some of you we'd give some more information at the beginning of this segment about her book. Dr. Ashworth, people have been hearing us talk about the book, Defeating the Child Obesity Epidemic. Where can someone pick up a copy of this book?
Well, it's now available in all bookstores across the country and also on Amazon.com. And you can either look it up under Ashworth or the title, Defeating the Child Obesity Epidemic.
Okay. And as I mentioned, I mean, if some haven't tuned in, I mean, this is one of the disadvantages of radio. I'd love to show the book, but to all our listeners, we, of course, can't do that. But this is laid out very nicely. You've got nice margins with lots of highlighted key facts in the margin as you read through the book, lots of tables, and lots of stories. So I would imagine this is going over very well with your patients, for example.
Oh, yeah. It's a number one bestseller in my office.
There you go.
But, all my patients want to buy a copy. But, it's been very well received, and we've had a very positive response from all different levels. I've had the American or the Dallas Dietetic Association has nominated me for an award based on the book. So that's a professional organization. I've had very nice compliments from the hospital nursing staff and, the lactation consultants and people, professionals like that. But I've had many, many comments just from the parents. Who are very appreciative of the help that they've gotten from the book. And my publisher's wife lost 25 pounds after proofreading the book.
Wow. Well, see, you know there's something in here that makes a
difference. Yeah, she said, let me just do everything you tell me to do in here. She said, I finally get it. So I know there's some benefit to everybody. So I think that it's an easy book to read. It's very much geared toward the layman. It's for the busy mom, the busy dad, the busy grandparent who can just quickly pick up the book. I think it's a quick read, and just they can garner a lot of information. And then we've got the tables in there that they can reference, like, what should I pack in a lunch? What can I do for a fun Sunday afternoon? Mm-hmm. That kind of thing. So it's user-friendly for sure.
Well, and just for the benefit of those who don't regularly listen to American Indian Living, this is not an infomercial. You haven't paid anything to be on the show. We don't make any money from selling your book. We provide information, cutting-edge health information that makes a difference, especially in Indian country, but many of these issues, as we're speaking about, obesity in children today, are important to people across cultural lines. With that in mind, Dr. Ashworth, we were talking about something in the last segment, and as we were speaking about it, I was thinking about many of our listeners, and there may be a little bit of a disconnect. They may be saying, well, look, we heard this pediatrician. I mean, she obviously knows what she's doing. I mean, she's written a book. She's been in practice for some 30 years. But what difference does it make how much time I spend at the dinner table, whether I'm there with my kids or not, and whether or not the TV's on? Help us to understand why you're recommending these leisurely meal without the TV and family time. Why is that so important in dealing with obesity?
Well, they've actually, we have multiple research studies that document that children who are in families where they do participate in a family meal are at far less risk for adult obesity or even childhood obesity. We also know that there have been studies that have shown that adolescents, teenagers, who participate in a family meal are far less likely to be risk takers. They have a far lower incidence of promiscuous sex, drug abuse, tobacco use, alcohol use. So we know that, you know, the kids seem to benefit in a multi-level way that's sometimes hard to always observe as a parent. But they have looked at these kids, and there's so many benefits. The family meal can be a very relaxing time. It's a time, like if you have the TV off, you can actually pay attention to each other. You are actually thinking about what you're eating. You're enjoying the food. You tend to not overeat because you're eating a little more slowly. You know, so we then know what if we have mindfully eaten, we have paid attention to what we've done, then we aren't just turning around 10 minutes later and having our head in the pantry looking for something to chomp on, you know, because we realize we've eaten, we're full, we're done with that, you know. And I think that we should respect our families and know that when the phone rings, you know, there just can't be enough emergencies during your family meal time, which I said could only be, it only has to be about 20 minutes, where you have to jump up and answer the phone. You know, screen the calls. I mean, if it's an emergency, answer it. But otherwise, let somebody wait. It's not that important. And the TV should be off. We need to take 20 minutes. We need to make ourselves more important than other people. And to me, having the TV on devalues the person you're sitting there with having a meal. Every time the phone rings, if that shouldn't be more important than the person sitting across from you. And it shouldn't be more important than your children and the time you spend with your children. And the TV, speaking of that, I think the TV is obviously a benefit in many ways to disperse information and to educate people. But what we do know is children who have a intense exposure to TV when they're up to three years of age do far less well on their testing when they're 6 years old. And kids who watch a lot of TV are more obese for multiple reasons. For one, the couch potato syndrome is really a reality. When you sit in front of the TV, your metabolism drops. You become kind of this, you know, blob that's ingesting information. And the thing that's really bad is marketers market directly to our children. So when you turn on the TV, you're letting that stranger come into your home and tell your children whatever they want to tell them. And kids under about 7 years of age can't tell the difference between a commercial and a TV show. And, of course, all the commercials have all their favorite TV characters in them. So for these children, it's very confusing, and they take everything on TV as the truth. And so you're letting strangers walk right through your front door and market to your kids, and that's wrong. You know, we've got to have some control as parents. We need to take control. And the screen time is TV time, computer time, video game time. All that should be added up, and kids over 2 should not have more than 2 hours a day of screen time.
Kids they should be over 2?
Pardon? 2 years.
What's the age limit there?
2 years and older, two hours a day. And I think, I mean, you could limit the 2 to 3 to 5 year olds. They don't need 2 hours a day of screen time, but pretty much that's kind of the guidelines that the American Academy of Pediatrics has given is no TV under 2 years of age and limit TV over 2. And then when you get up to the teenagers, that's when you have to talk about the total screen time, because you add up the time they're on the computer, on the video games, and on the TV, and some of these kids are watching 6 hours a day. They're spending more time on the screen than they are in school. There's something wrong with that. And we as parents need to control it. Let them have a treat. Let them have it as a reward. Let them watch a show or two, you know, a day. That's fine. But, you know, screen what they're watching and then make sure that they're getting out there and getting some fresh air and that you're spending some time with them. So I think too many families sitting around the TV think they're spending time with each other.
Mm.
And they are, I guess, but they're not really interacting and getting to know each other or enjoying each other.
No, I mean, I think this is fascinating because a lot of these things that we just take for granted, I mean, they're really much broader than it just appears on the surface. I mean, the TV issue, like you're bringing out, is not just a question of not exercising. It's also the values, the commercials, the kind of things the TV is putting in your mind, how different producers, I mean, soft drink manufacturers, snack food manufacturers, I mean, cigarette manufacturers, I mean, they're paying to have their products placed in these movies and these shows. Isn't that the case?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you can imagine if somebody picks up a soft drink with a label that they flash in one of the most popular movies, you know, all the kids, you know, when they did E.T., which was, you know, quite a while ago, the movie E.T., they had Reese's Pieces in that movie. And when that movie came out, they could not keep up with the production of Reese's Pieces, which up until then was not just their most popular product, but they had to go into 24/7 production when that movie came out. So that shows you how dramatically powerful TV and movies are in terms of marketing to our kids.
That's amazing. Well, now, the other part of the equation, Dr. Ashworth, I mean, it's not just what we eat. It's not just you know, the food choices we're making or not making, but this activity issue. And, you know, everyone says, well, we know we need to be doing more, our kids should be doing more, but practically, I mean, what kind of guidelines do you give to parents, whether they're concerned about their children's weight or they just want to avoid a problem?
Well, you know, starting out with, you know, getting them out of the strollers and having them walk, you know, just walking from the car to wherever they're going. I know it's a little more difficult to navigate a grocery store with a child who's not confined, but, you know, we have to think about these things. Let them walk a little bit. Park the car on the absolute opposite end of the parking lot and walk into the store. Unless the weather is just totally inclement, there's no reason not to. You know, my kids are always griping at me when they were little. You know, they say, well, why don't you park in the next parking lot across the street? You know, we're so far away. I said, well, I could, you know, but then we'd have to cross the street. So we'll just be in a safe environment here. Take the stairs. Why not walk up the stairs? If you're only going up one or two flights, take the stairs. Take the stairs down. You even get exercise walking down the stairs. You know, avoid escalators, avoid elevators, because all of those little things add up. It's like saving those little pennies that eventually end up to be a dollar, and then it's, you know, $10 and more. So that's what I'm saying is these little things. Go out and take the dog for a walk, or you know, just run around the house for a while, chase each other, tickle each other, play tag, you know, just a few things that will give you 10, 15 minutes of some pretty fun and vigorous activity, and that adds up. It all counts. All over the day, all of those little things add up. And then if we cut back a little on the food intake, you know, you pretty much got it made.
Well, you know, a lot of kids today, whether it's the children themselves, whether it's the parents, the grandparents, they feel that it's just not safe to be outside and exercise without supervision. And, you know, one of the issues you talk about in your book is the whole issue of commuting to school, whereas kids may have walked or ridden their bikes in the past. Now parents are often fearful, even if the school is relatively close, to let their kids get some exercise and get to school. They want to drive them, but you've talked about some creative alternatives. Tell our listeners about some of the things that you've been exploring. I know you want to do that, and we'll give you some time to do it in our next segment. I want to remind you, those of you that are tuning in with us, we're talking with Dr. Carolyn Ashworth. She's the author of the book, Defeating the Child Obesity Epidemic. We're going to be going in our next segment to this important question about how to get more activity in, including getting to school safely. I'm Dr. David DeRose. This and more information coming up. Stay tuned.
Today's broadcast has been pre-recorded. However, if you have questions about today's show or would like further information, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. We'll be right back after this.
What I say, you already know, but you don't believe. You won't accept, you don't conceive. When you're inside your car, you feel safest of all. Are you safe? Are you? 2 tons of sheet metal in your hands. 2 tons don't run on autopilot. You have a mission. It's no collision. Hold the phone. Don't text. You're angling to be next. Oh, you've done it before. What's the harm? Just this once, there's no alarm. Got your hands on the wheel? No big deal. Brothers and sisters, you won't see it coming. You're off the road. Your life explodes. It's not worth it. Don't do it. You only think there's nothing to it. Put it down. Hang up. Pay attention to highway action. Behind the wheel, there is no such thing as a small distraction. Join the conversation at DecideToDrive.org, a public service message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, who would rather help keep your bones strong than put them back together.
We are here to say a word about cancer.
When you talk to someone who has been diagnosed with cancer,
be positive.
Be supportive.
That's it. Stop right there.
Don't start telling them about your Uncle Vern.
Or the next door neighbor.
Don't be grim.
And try not to disappear either.
Don't cross to the other side of the street.
Don't stop calling.
Don't cry.
Don't ever say, you're living my worst nightmare.
You know who you are.
Here's the important part.
Be positive.
Be positive.
Sé positivo.
Say these words.
You will do great.
Keep calling.
Check in.
Be a friend.
Or be a new friend.
Be a supportive.
Positive friend.
Smile.
Try not to be afraid.
Or act afraid.
Fear is not useful.
Be a funny, hopeful human being.
If you come across cancer,
let it transform you into your most positive self.
And inspire.
Urge.
Fortify.
Rally.
Encourage someone to do great.
This message brought to you by Cancer Survivors.
For more information, to hear stories, or share your own, visit DoGreatCampaign.com. Do great.
You're listening to Dr. David DeRose on American Indian Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE. 1-800-775-4673. Here again is Dr. DeRose.
Welcome back, this time to our final segment of today's edition of American Indian Living. We're speaking about defeating the child obesity epidemic. That's the title of the book we've been highlighting in today's program. The author, Dr. Carolyn Ashworth, a board-certified specialist in the practice of pediatrics. Dr. Ashworth, we've been talking, one of the themes we've been discussing in this program is the simple solutions that can make a difference in helping kids to trim down or at least not gain weight as they're growing in height as they age. And one of the messages I especially appreciated had to do with the fact that we don't have to look for ways to get our kids involved in sports necessarily to help them get more activity. Before we went into our last break, we were speaking about ways to get our kids back to walking, riding their bicycles to go to school. You've got some creative solutions in your book. Tell us about them.
Yeah, one of the things that one parent came up with was what they call the walking school bus. And the kids came up with the idea. And so they get a parent each week to volunteer, each day to volunteer. Maybe they pick a day of the week that's better for them. And then the parent goes house to house and they start picking up kids. And eventually they have maybe 10 or 15 kids that this parent is supervising, taking to school, walking to school. Mm-hmm. So the parent's getting the exercise along with these kids being in a safe, supervised activity. And, you know, you could do the bike riding thing, too, if the parent is, that agile to ride a bike. That's probably, you'd find less parents doing that, fewer parents doing that. But I think the walking school bus thing is a great idea, and it's a simple thing, and you could certainly find enough people that could walk a mile or two each day to school and back.
No, that's great. You know, it brings up this whole subject of kind of reversing the peer influences, too, because in that story, you've got a child taking the initiative of kind of reclaiming, you know, some more physical activity into the day instead of another, you know, drive with the parents. But the peer influence, I mean, that's a big thing for kids, and how do you factor that into all these things we've been talking about?
Well, you know, what we have to do is start making some of these things cool, so to speak, you know. And it's a matter of getting people to start doing it. And when other people see how much fun, these kids love walking to school. I have them come in, and they're so excited telling me that they're riding their bike to school or they're walking to school. They just get all bubbly about it. And to me, that's so refreshing. And the kids are not, I don't have anybody coming in saying how great carpool was. I think that the more we do it, it may be the exception at first, but it'll soon become the rule as more and more people see that it really is fun. And, the only times I got driven to school was when it was bad. I grew up in Wisconsin, and when it was snowing, blizzard-like conditions. But even then, I had to walk to the bus, uphill in the snow. But anyway, we can do things. Kids find these things refreshing. And every single one of my patients that has adopted a healthier lifestyle is so excited that they have. I haven't had anybody say, oh, we hate this and we want to go back to the way we were.
Huh.
I've not had one person say that. They've all been ecstatic about the parents and their weight loss and their feeling of, they're more energized. The kids sleep better. These kids' classroom behavior is better if they get exercise. They test better. Their test scores are higher if they exercise. So, we really need to fight for that PE in school. We need to make sure those kids are getting PE. Almost all the kids, when they come in, I'll always say to them, if they're coming in for their checkups, I'll say, well, what's your favorite thing in school? And probably 90% of them say PE. The other half, the other 10% say lunch. But it's not because they're eating. It's because it's the social time,
Right.
But I think that's very refreshing. The kids love their PE, and we know that just if kids could participate in PE every day, we could really stem this tide of childhood obesity.
So making sure the schools are teaching physical education, not putting that off to the side because they've got to cram in so much math or reading, as important as those things are.
It's very important. And like I said, the kids are, it's been documented over and over that the kids have higher test scores if they are physically active.
Huh. Well, let's talk about the school environment a little bit more, because you already singled out one place that many kids like to be, and it's in the cafeteria. It's eating lunch. And most schools have a school lunch program. Is this a safe choice in most of the situations that you're aware of?
No, unfortunately. Right now, most school lunches are very high in fat, very high in calories. When you look at what they've got on the menu, it's tacos and chicken fingers and french fries and, things that, all the things that, pizza is the big one. Pizza Friday is the big thing. At least here in Texas, everybody has pizza on Friday. But what we need to do is, right now there's a big initiative, I think, throughout the United States in trying to change our school lunches, and particularly in the high schools and the middle schools, where you walk in and you think you're at a sporting event. It looks like a food court in a mall. Every fast food restaurant in town has their little place in the school cafeteria. And, the kids, when they are given these choices, obviously they're going to gravitate toward the bad choices because that's kind of where they've been, what they've grown up with. So I think if we get that out of the schools, at least we can control a third of their meals. And then, if we can teach healthier choices at home, maybe they can have healthier choices at school. And the other thing they've shown is that if we can control portion sizes, they've done studies where they one day will put a small portion on the cafeteria plate. The next day they put maybe what they would consider an average portion. And then another day they put just a double portion, and they notice that the kids eat whatever's on the plate, and they don't complain when there's less. So, it's once again, they're into the social thing. They're eating, and they're not thinking about what they're eating or whether they're full. And so, if we can kind of think about the portion sizes and what we're offering, and I can't fault, right now there's a very large initiative of getting the vending machines to have healthier choices and getting the school lunch programs more in line with what our goals are.
So it really comes back again to this theme that you've talked about already, and that's the parents being active and in the school environment, sharing their concerns. But as you mentioned earlier in the show, and I know that this is something that, you know, is close to your heart, you talk a lot about it in the book, but it's the power of parents to make a difference. I think it bears repeating, doesn't it, Dr. Ashworth?
Yeah, I mean, we can't sit back and say, oh, gee, there's all this junk on TV, and oh, yeah, the school doesn't have PE, and oh, yeah, they've given our kids bad lunches. And, you know, we can't just sit back and just let this happen. Why would we let that happen to our children? You know, to me, it just doesn't make sense. We're trying to give our kids the best education we can within our means. We're trying to give them some sort of legacy, trying to save for their future. We try to close them as best we can. We do everything we can for our kids, and then we turn around and let them eat all this junk. And it, to me, it's kind of like, what are we thinking? You know, what are we doing? It makes no sense. We're giving them the wrong legacy. If we want to leave them a legacy, we should leave them a legacy of a healthy and long life. And the parent, I think, is the sole person or the caretaker of the child, whoever that may be, is the only one that can really take total control and turn this whole thing around for us.
You know, I know you discussed this in your book, Dr. Ashworth, but I know it's an objection that many parents raise. They say, well, look, I mean, all the other kids, they're getting the junk foods, and I don't want to be the parent that deprives my kids of these foods. Even though they're not healthy, I don't want to be the bad one. Help our listeners to see through that common excuse.
Well, and I think that is an excuse, and we have to quit making those excuses. And I think if they read my book or another book that gives them some information, maybe they could go to their PTA and they could discuss this at the PTA and have a little power behind them with some facts so that they could get other people on board. And I think once the other parents hear of some of these facts that are so terribly devastating, they've got to turn around, and they've got to want to do something different. I mean, I can't imagine a parent sitting back and accepting this.
Yeah. Well, you've given us a lot to think about, a lot of practical insights. There's a lot more in your book. Again, for those of you who haven't been with us for the hour, we've been talking with Dr. Carolyn Ashworth. Dr. Ashworth is a pediatrician. She's the author of the book Defeating the Child Obesity Epidemic. It's a book that's easy to read, lots of practical stories, illustrations, available at Amazon.com, bookstores all over. Again, Defeating the Child Obesity Epidemic, Dr. Carolyn Ashworth. Thank you, Carolyn, for joining us today. Thank you to each one of you who joined us on today's edition of American Indian Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose, wishing you, your family, and your communities the very best of health.
This is Life Talk Radio.